This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
A Pint of Science 2019, recorded on location in Brew Union, Palmerston North, with MPR. Wednesday the 22nd of May, so what do you do? Genomics. Rob Elshire, so what do you do? A thirsty scientist walks into a pub and orders a pint of their finest ale. As they enjoy the pint, a casual conversation about the weather reaches its natural limits. Their new mate asks, so what do you do? This question can cause distress in many scientists. I know what I do, but how do I explain it in a way that's relatable and maybe even interesting? With the help of a volunteer, we hear a conversation now about working in genomics and how this kind of science connects with their life.
Kia ora. So, I came to the pub tonight and I made a new friend. His name's Wilson. This is Wilson.
Kia ora.
Kia ora. And we're going to have the typical kind of conversation that you have in a pub. Up here? Oh, sorry, mate. Okay. With instructions on top of the typical conversation. Right. So how are you going tonight, mate?
I'm going really good.
Yeah. Oh, cool. How's your beer?
My beer is going down very nicely. Yeah. Closest thing I could find to a Tui. It's very good. It's a good upgrade.
Right. So what do you do for a living?
I am a farmer.
A farmer? What kind of farming do you do?
I run a bull beef finishing farm, and it's sort of a mixed enterprise of bull beef finishing and cattle finishing, really. So it's a red meat farm, and we do crops and stuff as well. So we sort of run forage and cash crops as well as finishing cattle.
Is that in the Manawatu?
Yeah, it is. It's just sort of 25 minutes north of Palmerston North. So,
yeah. Okay, yeah, cool.
We're on the northern end of that Okawa sort of region, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So what about yourself?
So I'm a scientist.
Oh, how interesting. What kind of science do you do?
Genomics. So, you know, I always feel a little bit funny going to places and trying to explain what I do. And I worked up this thing to help me out. And I wondered if you'd give it a go with me.
Yeah, sure. By all means.
So you're a farmer. I bet you also like to eat.
Yes.
Yeah, me too. This usually works. Yeah. So what's your favorite kind of food?
I'm a carnivore by trade, so anything that I grow, lambs, beef, all of that sort of stuff.
Right. So you're a beef farmer, right?
Yeah.
So but we might as well use that as an example. So my work has a lot to do with studying DNA. And I got into this area of research some years ago because I had this simple idea, and those are the kind of ideas I basically have, simple ones, and they tend to sometimes work. Yep, got it. Thank you. So I got into this area of plant breeding because I thought, well, people need to eat, and you know, one of the things that we do and can do in science is help. Help that by making crops that work a little bit better. And similar things are, of course, in animal breeding. So my area really is around DNA, but that's only one of it, one thing. So when we think about the food that we eat, so like you think about a nice steak, right? What do you like about a nice steak?
And I guess that comes down to the traits in the animal, because if they're sort of well marbled and got a lot of intramuscular fat and all that sort of thing, it sort of adds to the eating experience and the flavour. So big, fat, lazy steers that have lots of fat in them, they usually end up being a succulent steak. So, yeah, it's those sorts of things that are really a champion.
So from the guy at the barbecue's point of view, yes. You know, you've got that. From a farmer's point of view, though, you probably think of some other things as well. So I would say maybe you're thinking about feed-to-gain ratio. How much food do you have to give it to gain?
Yeah. Those are some of our daily decisions that we...
And maybe some things around, for example, how hardy are the animals? How are they generally healthy? Are they resistant to some of the diseases that affect them?
Yes, those are very much some of the traits that help us streamline our businesses, that sort of stuff. How resistant they are to diseases and what their growth rate is, what their feed conversion efficiency is, and all that sort of stuff. The key attributes of all the things that we look at.
So those are all kinds of things we can measure, like measuring the marbling of the meat. We can measure feed-to-gain ratio. We can measure resistance. We can measure... fertility rates, all of those kinds of things, right?
Yep.
So in the science that I do, we would call that a phenotype. It's just something that you can measure. Just something you can measure.
Okay.
So that's not what I do. But it's important.
Good story, bro.
Well, I eat a steak, right?
Yeah. Okay.
But what I do is look at the DNA. So you can think of, in the animals, you've got some that might be resistant, some that grow fast, some that don't. They're all differences, right? They're not the same. If all of them were the same, there wouldn't be anything to think about. We would just do the same thing. It's the same with the DNA. So there are differences in DNA. When we look around the room and we look at the people here, we can see differences. Some of us are taller, some of us are shorter, some of us have blue eyes, some have brown. These are all differences. They're phenotypic differences that we can measure. Many of the things that we see, whether it's here in the room or in the work that you're doing, have a basis that in the DNA that causes those things. Some of them, like human height at maturity, are caused by many, many different genes. Some of them are caused by one or two, maybe a disease resistance. Would be just one gene. So when I was in the States working at Cornell University in corn, I spent a lot of time working in corn. But it's a good system to work in. And one of the things that I did there was I was asked in about 2007 to work with DNA sequencing machines. And I did that for a while. We did some interesting stuff. And then my boss said, well, can you take what you've done and make it so that you can find differences, lots of differences, in a cheap, fast, and easy way in maize, in corn? And we did that. So that's another part of it. So we've got the things that we can measure, that we see or taste or whatever, watch in our paddocks. We've got the differences in the DNA, so we've got those things. And let's say you've got in your mind the perfect steak and the perfect animal to grow it that's going to give you the best return for your investment and your time on the farm. But let's say we don't have that animal yet. We've got 1,000 different animals. Some of them have part of what we want, but not all of what we want. And let's say that what we want to do is have some sort of a breeding program that gets us from where we are with these 1,000 animals to just exactly what we're looking for in the most efficient way we can. So we do that by making all these kinds of measurements that we've talked about, the phenotypic measurements, and then we look at the DNA and we find the differences there, and then we find somebody that's really smart at statistics. That's not me either. I just do this DNA thing. That's all I do. So we find somebody that's really smart at statistics. We've got some people like you that are going to be out there saying, this is what I want. Some people like me that can look at differences in the DNA. And then we've come up with a plan which bulls do we cross with which heifers over time to make the most efficient path towards that beautiful steak that you're looking for. So that's the kind of fundamental science that part that I do. It's about these things of looking at differences, and that's really what we do in science. Is if it's all the same, there's nothing new to learn, nothing to work with. It's all about differences.
So once you identify the key traits and things like that that we may be looking for and all of that, and you obviously identify the gene sequence and things like that, how does that all come together? Is that more of a natural process, or are you sort of actively manipulating the gene sequence and things like that?
So
once you identify those traits and like lineage and things like that, well, how do you activate it so that you can replicate more of that particular thing that you're targeting?
So we can think of this is actually the fundamental question, isn't it? How does it work, really? And so what we do is exactly as you just said, Wilson. It's exactly as you just said. We can say, right, this trait and this part of DNA, this flavor, we know is associated with that trait. And we can find that piece of DNA again and again and again. So you can say, right, it's usually, you know, what we're looking for isn't just one thing. It's a bunch of things. And this is where it gets complicated. Let's say you've got a list of 10 traits or 100 that are really important to you. And you know that certain areas or certain flavors of parts of the DNA are associated with a good trait or a bad trait. And you want to combine all of the best stuff, which is bloody complicated. And that's why you need somebody that's smart in statistics, not me. So we do measurements. We pass it on to somebody that's really smart in statistics and breeding work. And they'll make a plan, and they'll say, right, you make these crosses over here, and then you take and make these crosses over here in that generation. And they're going to bring some of the important parts together that we want, but it may not happen in one generation. It may take five. And you made the next generation, you'll say, right, I'll take these two and do the mating, and then so on. So it's all natural in terms of the way nature works in reproduction. But we use a bit of bookkeeping to figure out which are the right ones to cross. So that's basically it in that kind of agricultural context.
Okay. Right. Because I did some work with a dairy farmer who obviously does a lot of genetic work with the bull selection and all that sort of stuff. And he was saying things like, it takes 7 years to identify a trait, another 7 years to stabilize it, and so on and so on. And when you think about that and compare that to some of the, you know, the synthetic conversations that are going around proteins and stuff like that, and that sort of a timeline, how does that type of work, fit in with a future that has that sort of type of disruptive feature to it?
So, yeah. So it's all about speeding up the process, right? And I hear exactly what you're saying. So identifying, you have to grow the animal long enough to see whether or not it's got the right traits that you're interested in. But could you imagine, and so this is kind of a little bit of a difference between the genomics driven approach that we can take today and the previous approaches that we would take. So in the past, and we still do some of it, I mean, this all kind of is related, but in the past when we didn't have the kind of information we have today, we would have to wait 7 years to grow the thing up. But now we can use some very fancy mathematical modeling to help us along the way. So if we can identify parts of the DNA that contribute really highly to a trait, and we make a cross, we can test the offspring young and know, do they have that or do they not? And so then you don't have to wait that 7 years. So we can, my kind of general area hasn't been in animals, it's been more in plants. And when you can think about this way, you can think about, you can make some crosses in plants and you can grow out thousands and thousands of them, which we can't really do easily in cattle, but we can do thousands and thousands of them in seedlings and test them and say, right, 10% have what we want. And the other ones, we just don't grow up anymore. They're done. So it's all about making this stuff happen a bit faster. And one of the reasons, there's a couple reasons why this is really important. One of them is having to do with the increasing population on the planet that we want to feed, right? And, you know, when we were talking a little bit before, I mentioned I got into this area of research because I think fundamentally people need to eat. So if we can make increases in gains in whether it's food conversion ratio or higher yields in the paddocks, if we can do that faster, then we can better keep up with the more people needing to eat food, right? The other thing around this has to do with we've been calling it for years now global climate change. We're now starting to call it global climate emergency, where things are moving, that the change in the climate is happening so fast that we need to be able to address, like, our plants and animals and us, need to be able to adapt. And so we can use this kind of science to help make that adaptation happen faster. So that's some of what we can do with this in the agricultural context.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's very good. Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, like, when you sort of look at the landscape now and they're talking about trees and all that sort of stuff, you'd sort of like to think that science is sort of putting a little bit of focus around how to magnify some of the gains and get traction around addressing some of these issues a lot faster anyway and being a bit more responsive. So, yeah, interesting line of work.
I think a lot of us are trying, but genomics is a bit bigger than that. Can I talk to you about some of the other things that we do? I made a list because I'm getting old and I start to forget things.
Yeah,
so one of the things that I think is important, I just want to tell you a bit about the way I work. So I make tools. It's a lot of what I do is I make tools and I give them away for other people to do cool things with. So this thing that we described, that we talked about looking at DNA, I developed a way of doing that was better, faster, cheaper. And my thinking was, and the thinking of the group that I was working with was, if you take public money and develop something really, really useful, then in order to get them, for everybody around us to get the most out of it, you give it away. And we did that. And I did that work when I was in the States. And when I came to New Zealand almost 6 years ago, the first conference I was at, there was a talk about gold kiwi fruit. You know about gold kiwi fruit.
Yep.
And would you recall that about almost 10 years ago, there was a disease that was sweeping through and killing and basically eliminating the kiwi fruit?
Yeah.
So when I got here, I found out that some scientists at Plant and Food Research, here in Palmerston North, used the technology, the genotyping by sequencing technology that we developed in the States and trained a few of them to use and just kind of gave away. They used that to identify some gold kiwi fruit plants that had resistance to that disease. And they used those plants to cross with ones that were higher quality to produce a whole bunch of plants that could then be planted out in again and rebuild the industry. And for me, this is a real success story, right? It's like we've taken technology, we've enabled people to do some cool things, and it's really helped. I mean, as a farmer, when you've got a bad year, you feel it. You feel it in your gut.
Yeah.
And so for me, it makes me feel quite good that we're able to do something. I didn't do that work, but I developed a tool that enabled other people to do the work. And so for me, from a philosophical standpoint, it's important to think about how we do our science and how we make it available to other people to do more with it. So that's the thing that's kind of important.
Okay. When it comes to a lot of the genetic work and all that sort of stuff, and you end up with superior lines of, say, grass or superior lines of cattle and all that sort of stuff, is there, like, conversations going along going around along the lines of if it's a balanced ecosystem and all of that sort of thing? I mean, like, really, you when you think about it, like a bell curve, a distribution of different traits and all that sort of thing, and you stack all the traits in one sort of area, eh? You know, and the flow-on effect of all that sort of genetic work. What does the future look like? And have that, what are the conversations that are going on around that?
That's a bloody good question. And it's a hard one, right? So when I first was learning about plant breeding, I was taught that the three most important traits that you breed for are yield, yield, and yield. That's it. In my previous work, I did some work in floriculture breeding in a plant called cyclamen. And you see it at Bunnings around Mother's Day. And I did some... I learned an important lesson when I was doing that work. I learned that around in the late 1800s, they smelled really good. They don't so much today, because that's not what was selected for, right? So your question is around how do we balance the ecosystem, or maybe it's around how do we balance nutrition?
I guess my issue is if you keep breeding for, like, if you take a view of what the ambition is or what the desired outcome is for a lot of breeding work and all that sort of stuff, are there traits that have merit for potentially other challenges that we have further down the line that we're overlooking and potentially breeding out? You know, these are some of the questions that I guess at this stage, you'd hope would be in some of those conversations.
I think those things are coming back around. I hope that this will be a clear explanation. If you have a couple genes close to one another on one of the pieces of DNA, right, and one gene does something that you want, that you really, really want, and another gene does something that you don't, it's hard to get them broken apart sometimes. So similarly, if you have some genes that do something that you really, really want and some that are here, and then you've got some that are really, really far away that you don't pay attention to, you lose those. So I think today we are getting to the place where we have the technology to do this better and to consider many, many more things. How well that's being done is going to be a function of who's doing it and where. But I think the conversation's a really important one to have.
Well, that's very interesting. I'm winging it now.
So, another thing that I just wanted to mention. So, genomics. We've been talking about agriculture a lot because that's where I come from and that's where you come from. But man, does a whole bunch more. I thought when I was working on this genotyping by sequencing method, we were going to do really cool stuff in corn and maybe something else. And then to my surprise, it turns out that it's really useful for bunches of things. So not so much human health. You may not believe this, but any two corn inbred lines have more differences in them than me and you to a chimpanzee. So we look around and we see differences, but the genetic diversity that we have in the human species is pretty small, and genotyping by sequencing isn't a great tool for that. So, yeah, you know, can't win them all. But it's been used in these agriculture, horticulture, but also in environmental sciences. It's being used in the fisheries, ecology, and even in New Zealand, it's being used in kiwi. Simon, who's behind me, is going to talk about that project in a little bit. I mentioned that I developed this tool and I gave it away for other people to use. And for me, you know, like, these tools are really great, but the benefits to society are around what other people do with them. And so some of that's around the commercialization. How do you do that? So in the kiwi fruit example, it's pretty obvious. They made a better kiwi fruit that was resistant to the disease. I think farmers are making money on it. New Zealand economy is better for it. Plant and Foods probably making some residuals. That's all good. And that's really awesome. So one of the other things that's going to happen tonight in this conversation is Lisa's going to talk about commercialization, Tonga species, and benefit to Maori communities. So all of these things are areas that genomics can do something with. And we've been talking about a lot of positive stuff, and there's some negative things around there too. But that's kind of a bit of what I do, and a bit of my outlook on how I work, and maybe how we could work better together.
Really cool.
thanks for the positive affirmation. So do you think we should open up to some questions? I'm not sure where I'm at on time. So should I wrap it up? Okay. So it looks like we're not going to have any time for questions, which is great for me. But I'm happy to talk to you all later. But I would just want to thank Wilson so much for agreeing to hang out here with me and talk about the science that we do.
No worries. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to excerpts from the Pint of Science 2019 series of talks at Brew Union in Palmerston North with NPR. To listen to more of these talks at a time that suits you, head to npr.nz/show/pint2019 for a full podcast list of all the talks held. Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.